dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I was thinking about coming out of the shoot here and telling y'all about my new boots that I got on, but y'all want to talk about puppy chow?
Clint, what is that, ostrich?
Hell no, that's python.
It's Sturdy's Daily.
Before we get to that boner.
On The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Yes, Dirty's Daily, baby. And Dirty's Daily is powered by the one and only Toro. Did he go in the Hall of Fame, the mascot Hall of Fame this year?
Hell yeah, he did.
Or I guess that was last year, 2025. He was in a building today, along with some of the Texans cheerleaders, along with some of the Texans personnel. We had us a little pep rally over here on Sports Radio 610, at Sports Radio 610. And a lot of team spirit in the building this morning, y'all. A lot of team spirit in the building. Boss lady, I had to give it to her. She stole the cake. Best dressed once again. I told everybody in the building that's why I wear sweats now to work. I just quit. I gave up. You can't compete. You might as well just blend into the background. And so that's where I'm at. But a big shout out to Toro in the building. By the way, be looking out on social media. I got a little swarmy. I was feeling a little swarmy when I saw Toro, so I took his ass out on one of the couches here in the hallway. So I don't know if Toro or the couch.
Oh, my God.
Correct. I don't know if Toro or the couch took more abuse. Both of the legs of the couch busted out from underneath it on one end. So that's what's going down. But big shout out to Toro for sponsoring today's Dirty Daily. Dirty's Daily. Quick update here. Not update, but announcement. Thursday, Thirsty Thursday. Big shout out to Bud Light. We are at Buffalo Wild Wings in Willowbrook this Thursday. Tomball Parkway. Is today Wednesday already?
Today's Wednesday, baby.
So that's tomorrow. Damn, it's already. Week's flying by, boys. Thirsty Thursday. Big shout out to Bud Light. Buffalo Wild Wings up in Willowbrook. Tomball Parkway. Come check it out. By the way, speaking of Texans representatives, the Texans cheerleaders will be there. I was told well in advance. They're not going to surprise us this time, Tyler. Tyler last week like, what is Clint talking about? What is Clint talking about? I said, well, hell, I didn't know the Texans cheerleaders were coming. I mean, that gets folks like John Capetillo, my boy. That gets him up off the couch and to come join us, man. The cheerleaders will be there at Buffalo Wild Wings up in Willowbrook. Come on through Friday, the football Friday. Big shout out to our Houston area Ford dealers. Big shout out to Tomball Ford and Academy Sports and Outdoors for making that happen all year long. We were at Boomer Jack's in Katy. Love the place. Love the place. In fact, last time I went over there, I may have stuck around for about 45 minutes and played dominoes and drank a couple extra beers.
Play a little dominoes?
I did. I played some dominoes, and it was the first time I played in a while, and I lost one and won one and then left before we had time to play game three to decide on it. But, yeah, hell of a place, man. Hell of a place. All right, we got to talk a little college football, boys. We obviously, rightfully so, we're heavy Texans right now, preparing for this wild card round playoff game up in Pittsburgh. But we got to talk a little college football. The college football. I don't know if you knew this, but there are a few guardrails actually that still exist in the NIL transfer.
Are there?
Yeah, a couple. There's a couple. And now I shouldn't say college football. I should give the credit to the Big Ten. The Big Ten does have a template that they use from a contract perspective. Their league members, meaning their teams, the Big Ten teams, they use a certain template when they sign players. And here's what's going on right now. It's one of the bigger stories outside the college football playoffs in college football. And I said this, I led with this. Lane Kiffin's got to be the most hated coach, not for leaving Ole Miss, but just overall for everything he's done. He's got to be the most hated coach in all college football circles. The University of Washington, they've got a quarterback up there. And here's my question to everybody. Is Washington doing the right thing here, or do you not believe that they're doing the right thing by the player? Here we go. The Washington Huskies, they had a quarterback last year, Damon Williams, really good player, threw for over 3,000 yards, threw for 25 touchdowns, rushed for 611 yards. I mean, he reminds me of, Ron, is the Trinidad Chambliss kid that's at Ole Miss right now. Everybody's seen him play. He's cut from that same cloth. A little bit undersized, so he wasn't a five-star, so he's not this guy that everybody was going to pay straight out of high school, but he is a winner. He's a player. He is a difference maker, right? And what happened was he had a hell of a year last year with Washington. Well, January the 2nd, which by today, today is January the 7th. January the 2nd, he signed a new deal in Washington for $4 million using that Big Ten template, right? And within that template, It is designed to keep players from signing a deal, accepting money, and then bouncing when something when the grass is a little greener, when something else pops, right? Well, what has happened is he signed that deal on January 2, all right? And if you remember correctly, what I told y'all, I believe it was Monday we talked a little college football. And what happened was the Brendan Sorsby kid, who's the number one quarterback in the transfer portal out of Cincinnati, was thought to be LSU's prime possession. He's going to LSU. He's going to LSU. Well, guess what? Coach McGuire up there at Texas Tech came in with that oil money and said, no, not so fast. So Sorsby goes to Texas Tech. So LSU is looking for a quarterback. So guess what they do? They called Damon Williams' representative and offer him $6 million. So a $2 million raise. Problem is, Damon Williams, 5 days ago, had already signed a deal for $4 million, and he signed a contract that was designed and worded and built in a way that was specific to not allow players to bounce under these circumstances. And the question is, what should Washington do? On one hand, you do the right thing, right? You allow the kid out. As I've said many a time, a kid starts his college career. He's got 5 years. It ain't nothing to be taken lightly. You don't steal it from the kid. But if you let him out of this deal, the little bit of guardrails that the Big Ten does have on this thing are gone. Because now kids, parents, agents, they're just like, hell, it don't matter what contracts happen. At any point in time, anybody comes to me, I can bounce and I can go for more money. I can leave for more money, right? So you either do the right thing by the kid and you let him bounce, and it creates this situation really in all of college football where kids don't, and it's not the kid, it's just players don't, the contracts don't mean anything, yeah. All right? Or,
and they can make more money.
Right, or if you're Washington, do you hold his feet to the fire for the greater good, the bigger picture, not about Washington, because it's in no way, shape, or form is it a good idea for Washington, the 2026 team, to hold a player's feet to the fire, force him to play for you when he wants to go. That's never a good – I mean, hell, I don't think it's good in the NFL when you're franchising guys and holding guys hostage in the NFL and you're paying them that kind of money, much less in this situation. What's the right thing to do? I think it's a rhetorical question. I mean, the answer – you know, I don't know what the answer is, but here's what Washington is doing. They're fighting back, right? They're refusing to – they're refusing his portal submission, which means that the university, now I don't know what, if there's ways around this, but the university is refusing to enter his name in the portal, and they're looking into the tampering claims against LSU, who again is rumored to have offered over $6 million to a quarterback that they signed 5 days. I mean, there's a couple of things here, Ron. I don't know. Sometimes you got to sacrifice one dude for the greater good. And I don't know where I land on this, what you do. Do you do the right thing, or do you try to change the landscape of college football, and at least in the Big Ten? Because if they let him out, every kid in the Big Ten that's not happy with their deal is going to bounce and start. This is going to become a major problem, right?
Are you going to just sit there and say, like, you feel this out. If the kid is out and don't want to be there.
That's the hiccup.
Yeah, I mean, hell, I don't want you to be here.
Right. That's the hiccup,
like,
right?
What are we going to do? You don't want to be here.
Yep.
And what's that going to come to? Make your ass, you know, be here? Like, I mean, I don't know that.
Yeah, it's wild, Ron, because I don't know. It definitely, if I'm the coach and I want to win in 2026, I want to do right by my team, it's say, man, get your ass up out of here. Say, and now there is also, by the way, there is a buyout clause that is there's not an amount that's stated. It is up to the university that the player's leaving in this template that the Big Ten is using. So Washington could say, yeah, we'll let you bounce, but LSU's got to give us another $2 million or something. So they can actually end up coming out in the good on this thing, having never paid any of the $4 million and get $2 million on top of it to spend, which LSU's obviously got plenty. But it's just an interesting situation that we've gotten into here. College football's gotten into here, because I can understand where you got to do right by the team if you're the coach, and you don't want a quarterback in there that doesn't want to be there, that wants to be out, that you're holding hostage. That is not conducive to winning football games, right?
No.
However,
and you doing that ain't going to stop other kids to want to try to get out if they can.
Well, I mean, legally,
and ain't going to stop other can, and ain't going to stop other lanes.
Right. No doubt. But if they can hold their feet to the fire and they can keep them or at least penalize them for leaving, and if you can at least hold Lane and them accountable for tampering, whatever that is, which I doubt any of that's possible, by the way, with the way the NCAA is operating. But it's just an interesting, you know, I'm not surprised that we're here with college football, but it is an interesting situation, Ron, where we've landed. And like I said, Lane Kiffin has got to be the most hated coach in college football. I mean, you just look at his track record. Have you seen that E60 with Lane Kiffin?
I have not seen it yet.
It's fascinating, bro. Of course, he's getting interviewed, and he's in the Ole Miss meeting room. So it's clearly right before any of the LSU stuff happened. But it's really interesting, kind of, you know, because I've never paid attention to Lane Kiffin's story enough to know what his explanation is. All I've heard is the noise and how he quit on all these universities. I found it fascinating to hear some of the details around, like, why he left Tennessee and went back to USC. When he got to USC, you know, kind of how that whole what do you call it when a school gets in trouble like that?
Sanctions.
Yeah, well, they told him they were going to lose a couple scholarships. They ended up losing 30, right? And then he wins with Pete Carroll's guys for 2 years. And then all of a sudden that 30 scholarships kicks in, and all of a sudden you're like, what the hell happened? So he lost a couple years. He got fired coming off the plane.
Well, didn't he just bounce out of Tennessee in the middle of the night to go to SC?
Well, he left out. Yes, he did. I don't know if it was the middle of the night, but he left out of Tennessee and got absolutely dog cussed for it on his way out. But the whole thought was, I mean, this is a once in a lifetime deal to take over his dream job at USC with Pete Carroll leaving the organization. What he thought was super healthy, right? He didn't know that it was going to fall apart. The wheels were going to come off the way that it did. So. I missed the part about the Raiders.
Oh, well, yeah. Al told everybody, he's like, I wouldn't mess with him.
Yeah.
Al Davis.
Yeah. I thought it shed, obviously, with Lane in it, it shed a little light on him, a positive light on him. But I tell you, man, from a, the way that he's left, the way he trolls, like, the way that he, I don't even know if it's trolling. The way that he just tries to get attention using Ole Miss's success right now instead of just staying out of the mix, the way he tweets or the way that he, you know, these stories get out where he has, I don't know if you heard the story, I think you may have been out, but he was trying to get, the word on the street was that he was asked ESPN for permission to make a visit to the booth during Ole Miss Georgia game, stuff like that. It's got to be, from the outside, I laugh, I chuckle at it, but it's got to be in those circles, man. It's got to be.
Well, I mean, you heard Paul Feinbaum talk about, like, in college football circles, like, he is an ass to many, like, he is not well received by most people.
Speaking of Paul Feinbaum, the Alabama situation, you know, the light they shed on that was Saban basically didn't. I thought the bus left him and he had been out in them streets and stuff. But no, I mean, basically, he was already taking the job at FAU or FIU or wherever it was. And Nick said, I don't want you torn between two jobs and trying to do two jobs. And so Sark took the play calling over. It was interesting, man. It was fascinating. By the way, I don't know, Tyler, have you seen any more of the reports of the Ole Miss? I talked about this last week of, you know, how many of the Ole Miss coaches that are going to go to LSU, how many of them are going to actually coach the rest of the way? After they won the Georgia game, Ron, there was like six different coaches. There's six different coaches that are on the Ole Miss staff right now that are believed to, I think they're actually have already accepted jobs at LSU. Now, I think three or four of them are like assistant type guys. They're not, you know, big play callers or anything. But I think four of the six left and gone to LSU because the portal's already hit. And I think two of those coaches are going to stay at Ole Miss. Once again, college football, where we're at right now, you got a team that has got a Cinderella story going, and coaches that are belling to go to what they believe is a rival in their book. I mean, that's why. Now Charlie Weiss Jr. did stay.
Yeah,
I think the tight end.
They got a couple of, I think, two or three coaches that are staying and coaching tomorrow, and will coach if they advance past Miami.
Yeah, well, it was just wild to think that. I mean. The first news I saw, Ron, after they beat Georgia was the AD being asked about the LSU coaches, will they be here next week? Will they coach through the week? And he said, I don't know. We're going to enjoy this one tonight. So when he said, I don't know, I was like, that's a real thing. I would have thought for sure that they worked it out with all these guys. Like, hey, man, you're going to be here for the long haul, or yes, got to go. You can't come in for 1 week,
yeah,
right? But no, they're doing it week to week, apparently. So it's wild, man. Hopefully they'll get this thing straightened out. Hopefully the kid and DeMond Williams, a quarterback from Washington, hell of a player. Hopefully he gets this thing figured out, whether it's at Washington or LSU.
I'm certain it'll get handled, but it ain't going to be straightened out in anything that makes sense, that makes it better. Like,
right.
Like it's still going. This may be just the next step in trying to push the envelope on what you can get away with. All right, coming up as we continue, B. Scott coming up at 4:40 with his Texans report, playoff version. But before we get there, and maybe he'll jump in on this, but I think there is a this is one of the bigger questions coming into this game for the Texans on what they're going to do across the offensive line. Who's going to play right tackle? Who is going to be the one going up against T.J. Watt? Trent Brown or Titus Howard? We'll discuss that coming up next.
What's up, Clint? How y'all doing, man?
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Clint, I have a real good feel that, to me, if the Texans can do an adequate job of handling whatever pass rush or pressure that the Steelers are going to try to put forth, if they can just be able to hold their own, Clint. Like, and listen, I think some of these guys, you got T.J. Watt coming off one side, you got Alex Highsmith coming off the other side, you got Cam Hayward, Harmon is pretty good, the rookie. Like, you got some of the guys they have over there. Higbee's got 7.5 sacks on this team as well. Like, they're going to get some pressure. You know, they may even get C.J. down, right? There's going to be some pressure. But if they can hold their own and not make it the story of the game, I find it really hard for the Steelers to win this game. Like, if they're able to run their stuff and run the football decently and get, you know, Nico and Noel and I was going to say Christian Kirk, but well, I'm not kidding. But if they can get some of these guys and be able to run their offense and do things, like, I find it really hard for the Steelers to win this game. But I can also see the scenario where T.J. Watt, Cam Hayward, Higbee, Highsmith give them problems. We watched it last week at times give Lamar problems. We've seen this. I watched them here recently against Jared Goff give them problems. And they've got a couple of situations, Clint. Are they going to start? Is Trent Brown going to come back and they're going to run with that offensive line that they had where it turned things around? Are they going to have Titus Howard back at right tackle? I'll be honest, I feel better about Titus Howard on T.J. Watt than Trent Brown with a bad knee. But I also don't love the potential of Cam Hayward against Patterson in the middle. So, like, that to me is the biggest question in the game for the Texans is, are they able to hold their own and not allow the Steelers' pass rush to, for the Texans, negatively be the story?
Well, look, I think if the Texans can run their stuff against anybody, they're going to win the game, and they might even win it convincingly.
With their defense, yeah.
I mean, it just, the reality of it is if C.J. can stay comfortable and if they're getting soft coverage and teams are not athletic enough to run with guys like Dalton Schultz, guys like Xavier Hutchinson, guys like Higgins, if guys aren't able to run with them, or if teams schematically are just going to play zones and the bend don't break, the Texans are going to beat the hell out of folks. I mean, not just beat them. They're going, and CJ's going to have monster days. Now, unfortunately, I don't believe that's going to happen to any degree. I mean, it may happen, let's call it between the 20s, so make it a field goal game and you know, hope your guys can score a couple times against our defense and win that way. But it's for the most part, you're, at some point in the game, probably sooner rather than later, you're going to see some crowded box. You're going to see some crowd in the line of scrimmage. You're going to see them force CJ into a position where he's got to communicate what the hell's going on, and he's got to Nick Caley's got to figure out what's going on. And so, I think if they can run their offense, they're going to win. They're going to win convincingly. I just don't think I'm not real confident that that's going to get done in a clean fashion.
Yeah, and to me, I'm not even talking about it being like perfect, right? Like it just. If they are able to, like I say, hold their own, which means like it's not a domination. Like they're going to win some and you'll win some. But if they're able to do that, I think they will be fine. By the way, like if Trent Brown is able to go, is that the route you would want to go for this defense?
That's the route I would go. That's the route I would go, yes.
Even with the knee, yeah.
And really because that gives me – I've said this a million times. That gives me a better chance inside just from a size standpoint to hold up against their interior guys, which allows C.J. Stroud somewhere to push up, which allows C.J. Stroud some separation from Hayward and some of their interior guys that can block passes. So I would go Titus Howard inside, and I'd go Trent Brown outside and until it became a major issue, and then I would help, obviously. But I with Trent Brown and Arionte Ursher, to be honest with you, you know, the bull rush is really not a thing, right? I mean, watch them both get dump trucked this week. But, like, the bull rush is just not a thing, right? They know that the opponent's going to be heavily dependent on the speed rush, which puts you outside, or some kind of game which puts it delayed. So, you know, if you do need to help either one of those guys, they know it's going to come a speed rush outside. I mean, T.J. Watt's not going to overpower Trent Brown, I don't believe. You know, from jump. So you kind of make not one dimensional is not the right word, but you make them a little bit more predictable, I think, with Trent Brown on the edge, and you make things a little bit more solid with Titus Howard at guard. So I would think if everybody's healthy, that's the route they go.
You're thinking is the guard is position more than the tackle.
Yeah, Titus would be fine at either position. I just think Titus, it's a Jarrett Patterson, Titus Howard difference inside. And I mean, you've got one's got the size and the strength and the length to I think maybe not completely eliminate Hayward, but handle him better. And I think Jarrett Patterson and Jake Andrews are going to have their hands full with him if that's him too at left guard and center.
Yeah, text line coming in. Trent Brown held up pretty well against Max Crosby. To me it's just the knee situation, right? Like I think we all kind of understand that whoever is on the right side, you know, they're probably going to have to – there's probably going to be some one-on-ones that they're going to have to roll with just because Cam Hayward, there's going to be need of help. Like if Cam Hayward lines up, you know, in the gap between Ed Ingram and Jake Andrews, Ed Ingram's going to have to help Jake Andrews.
No doubt.
Right? And maybe you chip or whatever, but – that speed coming off the outside, and I agree with you. He's like Max Crosby had some moments. I look at the Bosa game; he held up pretty well against Bosa, but now we're adding some sort of a knee issue. That's what's held him out the last couple of games. So that's also something to factor in. And I'll be honest, just from a pass rushing situation, if you're saying with T.J. Watt. I personally just feel a lot more comfortable with Titus Howard out there, but I get the point of the interior deal of their guys inside, because Harmon can potentially be a problem too if he's left one on one.
Well, the interesting thing too is if you watch that game last week, it is no. Well, I don't know if he was not in shape or he wasn't completely healthy, one of the two. But T.J. Watt was not himself. Now, late he came along. When the interception happened, it kind of just fell in his hands. But he came along
late. But he was coming around the corner.
Yeah, he was a problem. Yeah. But I mean, there was multiple times in that game where he's got to turn and run. In fact, when Harmon caught
Lamar.
When Harmon caught Lamar, T.J. was chasing him and had a head start and didn't look good running. So whatever went on with that lung, that punctured lung or whatever, that is a, you know – I would imagine CJ will be healthier. I would imagine TJ will be healthier. I would imagine TJ will be, in better game shape. But if it is that injury and it's not about, boy, you just not quite there yet, He's not quite the T.J. Watt that you expect to see. Yeah, so we'll see.
All right, coming up, Texans report there with Brandon Scott. We'll get his thoughts on the O-line, and we'll get his thoughts on this game coming up. Playoff edition, Texans report with Brandon Scott coming up next.
Football in H-Town is on the rise.
I love D'Amico Ryans, man. I tell you what.
H-Town, I'm back.
Our guy B. Scott has all the latest from the gridiron.
I don't see no bitches nowhere around here.
It's time for your weekly Texans report.
You ain't laying down for nobody.
On The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome in. Playoff edition Texans report every single Wednesday at 4:40. B. Scott joins us here. And Brandon, some news coming across right off the bat here.
Oh, yeah?
As you jump on with this, according to Aaron Wilson, Kevon Wallace. Many people were surprised was released in favor of bringing Daryl Taylor back off of IR. The Texans are re-signing safety Kevon Wallace to practice squad.
All right. Good for him. Good for him. I'm so excited.
The practice squad. Does that mean he will dress? Does that mean he'll be a part of the playoff roster coming up on Monday? But many people were wondering, a few people were wondering about that situation, and he is back on the practice squad.
Dude, they have been piecemealing together that position literally the entire year, right? The other safety was supposed to be C.J. Gardner-Johnson. They released him early in the year, and since then it's been a hodgepodge
MJ Stewart
until he got injured, and then they had the rookie Jalen Reed out there until he got injured. And now they've just been trying to piece together that position ever since. And look, they've been able to figure it out and still be, if not the league's top defense, among the top defenses in all of the league, despite having a question mark at the safety position opposite of Kalen Bullock. So for me, it's kind of a non-factor, a little bit of a non-story. Like for me, unless you're telling me that they're replacing Kevon Wallace with Gerald Wallace or Ben Wallace or Rasheed Wallace, I don't really too much care. We'll have to hear about it. They've done enough. Wallace from The Wire, like any Wallace at this point.
Like, any Wallace.
Like, and look, and I was saying this before we started. It is relevant from the standpoint of this is the one position on an elite defense where I can't tell you and you can't tell me who actually plays that position for the team because it's been such a revolving door. And so to that degree, it's relevant. But again, I would reiterate the point that they have figured out a way to work around.
Well, I mean, look, if Reed's coming back, I mean, you're talking about one of their guys from jump that they drafted. You're talking about a guy that's been in the building with this defense, learning the defense, communicating the defense for an entire season, not just a handful of however long Kevon Wallace has been here. So, I mean, that would make sense, right? They think highly of Reed, and they want to put him in there. To me, the crazy part is I guess depth isn't a problem. I was under the impression that depth would be a slight issue and just kind of, hey, man, this guy played for a couple weeks. Now you can be on the P squad. But I guess with Miles Bryant back there, you're still your quality depth at multiple positions. And so really all you're looking for is that starter.
Yeah, it sounds like until Jalen Reed is ready to go, that Kevon Wallace is going to be an option to bring up from the practice squad, right? And so I think that they believe that if they advance, you know, if Jalen Reed's not available to play in this game, if they advance, they probably anticipate that he would be available to play in the next game. If he's not available to play in this game, then Kevon Wallace is somebody that they could activate as soon as, you know, Saturday, Sunday, whenever it is. I know the game is Monday night, so right before the game, he might be a standard elevation. But we're talking about a practice squad elevation guy for a spot, the one kind of kink in the armor that they got.
Yeah, let's get more into things that are going to determine the outcome of the game. What is your – what are you – looking at that potentially is the biggest factor in this game and being around these guys, D'Amico and them, what's the feel of the biggest thing in your mind that you're looking at this game that's a factor in this game against the Steelers?
So, Clint, we talk a lot on this show about the rubber meeting the road. This is the ultimate rubber meets the road matchup for me. I mean, like, think about it. This is the game where the key changes that you made in the offseason, the big ones, this is the game where that's going to be ultimately put to the test.
the offensive coordinator? Like, what are the things that you have the most questions about aside from the fact that they don't have a clear safety aside from Kalen Bullock, right? What are the things that you are most concerned about? The offense and the person that's leading that offense, that being Nick Caley, the play caller. That was a key change that the Texans made in the offseason, firing their offensive coordinator, who they did have some success with, and replacing them with an unknown. And even up to this point, 9-game winning streak, 12 wins on the season, third straight season into the playoffs, we still have these relevant questions about the offensive coordinator and the play caller going into this game. So what kind of game is Nick Caley going to dial up? That's been a question going all the way back to the offseason and remains a question up until now. And then the offensive line, which has been better throughout this winning streak, but at the same time, I think it has its weaknesses. It's been unhealthy at times. And then just flat out, this is a worse matchup from an offensive line standpoint, from a protection standpoint, from a pass rush on the other side standpoint. This is a worse matchup than the Ravens would have been. When you're talking about Highsmith, TJ Watt, they've got the rookie on the inside. Of course, Cam Hayward, who is, you know, going to make a Hall of Fame bid. They got at least no less than four guys that are going to be tough to block up front. So that's what it's going to come down to me. The changes that the Texans made in the offseason, are they going to pay dividends in this game specifically? Oh, and by the way, they're looking to get their first road playoff victory in the D'Amico Ryans era.
What do you think of Pittsburgh, just from a standpoint? Because I think if you look at the box scores, you look at the stat line from this year, I think it's easy to kind of probably get overconfident, to be honest with you. But when you look at this group, I mean, they've been inconsistent, underperformed on both sides of the football for a good chunk of the year. I mean, what do you think let's start with the defense in particular. How good do you think they can be, or do you think they are what their stats say they are?
So I think that the Steelers are honestly a lesser version of the Texans. Like I think that, and that's the reason why there's some confidence on my end that the Texans can and should win this game. But to be clear, like, it's not like the Steelers are out of this thing. They're hosting this game, and they are a similar outfit, a team that can wreck a game up front on the defensive side. And they got a quarterback that, like, an offense that is uninspiring overall, but a quarterback that can dial it up. So you ask about the defense. We were just hitting on this a moment ago. T.J. Watt, I know he's banged up, but he's still T.J. Watt, and we understand how the Watts get after it. They got motors like none other. You got Highsmith on the other side. You got on the inside the Harmon.
Yeah, the rookie from Oregon.
The rookie from Oregon, and, of course, I mentioned Cam Hayward. That's four guys right there that, again, are going to be tough to block. Now, they don't have the secondary that the Texans have. So if they're able to block it up, I trust that the weapons, especially based off of what I've seen from the Texans as of late, that they can get the ball out to their weapons if they can block this thing up, and they should be able to move the ball and hopefully get in the end zone more than they kick field goals, which has been an issue for them throughout the season. Going back to the question that I have about the game, like, are they going to be able to, like, right those wrongs, so to speak? But from a defensive standpoint, I'm looking at those guys up front as that being, and I think you guys have talked about this throughout the show, that being like the key matchup. And I think it's the key matchup, honestly, on both sides, right? Blocking the guys up front for Pittsburgh is the key matchup for the Texans. And then likewise, and Mike Tomlin has talked about this, and we know this as people who have watched every snap of the Texans, blocking Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, and everything that the Texans got up front is going to be key for a Steelers team that's trying to protect a 40-plus-year-old quarterback who's on his last leg and only really has one weapon, and we talked about this, DK Metcalf, one real threat to speak of.
Speaking of that, and speaking of Metcalf, they haven't had him, right? And their offense, it looked really bad against Cleveland. They seem to find something against Baltimore. We've watched Baltimore. Their defense got a little bit better, but it still was not up to par.
They cannot rush the passer
at all. That's a big difference. But DK Metcalf's going to be highly motivated, and as a player that has had big success in this league, how big a deal do you think the addition of him to this offense now for the Texans on their defense? Like, I mean, the Texans have faced some good receivers. Is this a big thing that changes a lot?
Yeah, I think without DK Metcalf, they have no chance. Like, I understand that they won this game against Baltimore, and it was a hell of a game. Baltimore kind of gave it to him at the end by not knocking down that field goal. Could have just been easy if they had done that. But, no, I think without DK Metcalf, they have no chance. I think with DK Metcalf, they absolutely have a chance, right? And then to the conversation y'all were having earlier about what do you do with him? Do you go with the more physical corner, or at least kind of stylistically and brand wise, that's what Kamari Lassiter is. That's how he's made his name so far in the league, of being a more physical corner. Yep. Or to your point, Clint, Derek Stingley Jr. is actually the bigger corner and, of course, the better, more accomplished, the all-pro guy. I would just trust that more so against a DK Metcalf. But as far as how big of a deal is, I think it's a tremendous deal, because it's the, like, DK Metcalf, not a perfect receiver, but a game breaker, somebody that can change the game. I don't feel like they really had that outside of Freiermuth. I mean, other than that, man, they're out there with Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Scotty Miller, Adam Thielen. I mean, these were the guys that were running routes for them the other night.
Yeah.
So, like, this is going to be a different thing now that they have DK Metcalf out there. It'll be up to the Texans on how they defend him.
Does he change the way that the Texans approach defense?
Does him? I don't think out of the gate. I don't think out of the gate it does. I think you let it become a problem before you make it a problem. You know, that kind of approach. But I mean, the reality of it is if you look at what the Texans have, defense has been gotten by, is the explosive play. And if you look at kind of who's gotten them and how it's been done, it's things that DK Metcalf can do well.
And Aaron Rodgers, like,
bingo.
Like, think about this.
Yeah.
Could you not see back-breaking plays be the Aaron Rodgers, the infamous, if you're a Texans fan, infamous Aaron Rodgers back shoulder throw to DK Metcalf?
Yeah.
Like, the type of play, and Clint, you know this as a quarterback, like, the type of play that can be perfectly defended, but if it's perfectly executed, there's not much of a defense for it.
Yeah, well
he had a couple of those against the Ravens.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No question. But and then, you know, you look at, you know, his ability to anticipate and get the ball out of his hand and lay it in zones or lay it in voids in defenses. I mean, you're going to have to do that at a high level against the Texans, or you're not going to beat them. Like, you can't – like some of these quarterbacks have to wait and see. Now, I'm not talking about the go routes, but I'm talking about some of the in-breaking stuff. And, like, some of these young quarterbacks and some of the older ones, they have to see it open before they throw it. And if that's the case, you got to hold it an extra tick against the Texans, and you have no chance.
Yeah.
Right? So you look at, like, Aaron Rodgers' ability to have a complete control at the line of scrimmage, his ability this year to throw the quick game in the screen game and use Gainwell in the pass game, but really his ability to anticipate and float the ball down the field to certain spots and give his guys chances, it's not like – we talked about it earlier. Like, with our defense, I mean, if you can make a big play in the first quarter, I mean, you apply pressure on the Texans in a way that you most other teams don't feel it, because the Texans' offense now has to go play.
Yeah, I think the strategy from both teams – and we can expect this, is going to be a dink and dunk type of thing, like a dink and dunk type of strategy. And when it is time to drop back and take your shots, who is going to have more time, and who is going to make the most of said time? I think it's going to come down to that.
Yep.
All right, we appreciate you joining us. Hopefully next week we're talking about a win and preparing for the divisional round of the playoffs with the Texans on a Texans report. And stave off that Rockets report. Let's see if we can
Man, that those are going to be good too.
They will.
It's good times in Houston right now. Those are going to be fire too. So I'm ready for that.
I'd have to mix in an Astros report. All right.
So a little Emay. I'm still working on that. Hopefully by the time we do an Astros report, I have my man's name pronounced correctly.
It's different than Emay, because Emay Udoka. So it's the other opposite of that.
Because every time they say Emay, I'm like, what about the Rockets now?
Right.
But they mean Emay.
I mean, according to Sean Bajani, it's the opposite. It's M-E.
M-E?
M-E? I thought it was M-I.
I'm going to have to figure that out.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to figure it out.
It might be M-I, might be right. I know it's not M-A is the point.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to get out there.
That's your dope.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's right, Sean. I hear you.
I'm going to try to get out there to the, what are we calling, the AC box, the AC joint? What are we calling the?
The dike.
The dike.
The dike, yeah.
Yeah. When I get out to the dike, I'm going to try to find
there
out.
There you go. All right, this B. Scott. Hey, check him out tomorrow. He'll be on In the Loop around 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock on In the Loop tomorrow.
Right.
Check him out.
You've been active on that pod, too, now.
There you go.
Yeah, man, B-Block Podcast, In the Loop, The Drive.
Come on, man.
A bunch of different ways you can
all
get
all over
your
the place, boy.
Now.
5 o'clock fire as we continue rolling right here on The Drive, coming up next.